And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Out of the Box. And I'm Felicia, sitting in here for Jimmy, but Jimmy is going to be joining us very, very soon. And he will be online. And we're happy to have Jimmy on the show, too. So Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kalaheo Chiropractic and Qingyang Village.
This is Ron Whaley, KKCR, Hanalei, and KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Help your neighborhood. Learn life-saving skills. Protect your family and friends and support your community. Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT, is providing free training in disaster response, rescue and medical operations, and search and team organization. Classes meet for 6 sessions. Our next class will begin February 24th on the North Shore at the Sunset Drive Clubhouse in Princeville. To register, simply go to kauai.gov/CERT, C-E-R-T. For more information, call John Cornell with the fire department at 645-0661. Again, John Cornell at 645-0661.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, Natural Pain Relief Services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
Love, love we do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please.
Declare your love on KKCR. Donate $10 or more to KKCR by Friday, February 11th, and hear your declaration of love announced on KKCR during every live show from 7 a.m. to midnight on Valentine's Day, Sunday, February 14th. More information online at kkcr.org or call 808-826-7774.
Love me do.
And mahalo for listening to Out of the Box. And Jimmy is with us, not only in spirit, he is not in the flesh, but he is on the phone. Jimmy, are you there?
I think I am.
You are. You're in live and loud and perfect. And then we have two guests in here. I want to make sure that they are mic'd up right. Benjamin Katz.
Hello.
There we go. Benjamin, it's great. And Benjamin, you are from Kauai Community College, Ho'oulu'ehi.
That's right. I'm the director of the Ho'oulu'ehi Sustainable Living Institute of Kauai.
Okay, and that gives people a pretty good idea of what we're going to be talking about. And then Megan Fox.
Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. And then how do you want to introduce yourself? You do so many things. You wear so many hats.
For the most part, I work mainly for Malama Kauai.
Malama Kauai, which does?
We mostly focus on sustainability efforts and agricultural education across the island, so lots of different programs.
Including school gardens, and just I always like to look at words. Sometimes people use this word sustainable, and people don't know what that means. Resilient is another word I like to use, but mm-hmm. sustainable means it can continue without needing something from somewhere else. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of look at it as food sovereignty for the island.
food sovereignty, and then, you know, ideally energy sovereignty and all kinds of things.
It's all connected.
And so, Jimmy, bring your voice up here.
Right. Well, Felicia, thank you so much for being a co-host from, well, I guess I'm from a distance, but you're right there in the flesh. And Megan and Benjamin, thanks for willing to come up into the, if you will, the back roads of Princeville and check out our digs. I don't know what it looks like now, but it's, I guess, getting a remodel, so that's kind of a good thing. And I wanted to carry on with the conversation that Megan was a part of during our last show 2 weeks ago when Megan and also Eric Hansen was on the phone, and we were hopefully going to be joined by a farmer from Pennsylvania who was on island. Unfortunately, Margaret Schloss was not available. She was invited by Kauai Community College to talk to, if you will, our natural resource students in the Department of Ed program, and some of the instructors at the college at KCC were able to organize a field trip for our high school students in the natural resources pathway. That's kind of some technical jargon as far as how the college and the Department of Ed looks at agriculture as a natural resource career pathway, and we can talk a little bit more about that with Megan because she's done a lot of work in exploring that area. But I wanted to bring Benjamin up to the station because, one, Benjamin, you're new in your position, so we'll hear more about what Ho'oulubehi does and what you guys have been doing and what you hope to have happen there at the Sustainable Living Institute of Kauai, or Ho'oulubehi. And Megan, you're collaborating on a number of levels, as Felicia pointed out. So maybe we'll just jump right into it and give you an opportunity, Benjamin, to introduce yourself to listeners who aren't familiar with you and what you've done and what Ho'oulubehi is all about. So maybe a little brief background on yourself, and then what is Ho'oulubehi?
Sure. Thanks, Jimmy. So I am originally from Iowa, farm country, and grew up in a small community in southeastern Iowa. And I have a degree from the Maharishi University in sustainability and sustainable living. And I also have an MBA in sustainable business from the Bainbridge Graduate Institute near Seattle. And I've done all sorts of things. I was a magazine editor. I was a sustainability manager for an ecotourism company in Fiji. I've started a landscaping business. But I'm really excited to now be working with KCC as their director of sustainability. And Ho'oulubehi was started about 5 years ago, and there was one person in my position previously. His name was Eric Knutson, and he started a number of different projects, and I'm carrying those forward. And we're also across the campus looking at all the things that everybody has been doing and trying to formulate a vision, a unified vision for the campus and how everybody can work towards common goals.
You mentioned some of the projects, maybe for some of the listeners who haven't had the opportunity to do some research. What are some of those projects that are in place and some of the work that Eric kind of got rolling and how you're managing them now?
Well, sure. A couple of the projects was one is our aquaponics system, and we actually have some courses coming up through OSET, continuing education and training. And those are going to be Wednesdays in March from 5:30 to 8:30, and then again in August. And first 9 people to sign up are going to get a $55 scholarship. So we're excited about that, teaching people how to grow both vegetables and fish without using soil.
And do you have a contact number for them?
Yeah, I do. So they can call 245-8318. That's 245-8318, or you can go online to kauai.hawaii.edu/training and sign up for those. And so that program's run, I oversee it, but Ulrich Müller is really a master at the aquaponics system, and we wouldn't be where we are without him. He is really dedicated, really knows his stuff, so it's really great working with him. And then the apiary, which you're very familiar with. And
Means bees.
That does mean bees. Bees and honey.
And, bees and honey and pollination. And we also have some classes that'll be starting later on in the month of February. And same information. You can call the folks at OSET if you're interested in learning more about bees and putting on a suit and learning how to manage bees as well as harvest honey and grow an apiary if that is something that you're interested in.
Yeah, and we are starting to talk about how we can integrate that into our curriculum for our agriculture program. We have a degree program in plant biology and tropical agriculture, and so we're looking at ways we can integrate our apiary into some of those courses. So that's pretty exciting too. Looking towards more sustainability in agriculture, and so that's something I'm really interested in: is how do we flip our source of food? Right now, you know, we import about 90% of all of our food, and we can really be producing a lot more than we are now. So hopefully we can have a big impact in that through education at KCC and also with a lot of the work that Megan is doing too. So it really starts before college, getting students interested in agriculture and getting hands-on experience on our farms. And so we've really got a lot to offer.
A lot to offer and a lot to do. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You started at the beginning of the school year, I guess would have been in August or September.
Yeah.
And what would you say has been the focus of your work so far?
The focus really has been a lot of planning. And it's a very different environment that I'm used to working in. Trying to understand what all has been going on before I got there, just meeting people and trying to figure out how to actually get things done. There's a bit of a learning curve with that. And we are working on some grants. We've got one big grant that's due next week. It's a Perkins grant for the agriculture program, so I'm excited about that. And I think we've got a good story to tell. And we're also working on with Zero Waste Kauai, a strategy for reducing the amount of waste that we generate through our day-to-day activities and also increasing the amount that we're able to recycle. So a lot of recyclables end up in the landfill, and there's different systemic changes that we can make that make it easy for people to make decisions that are more sustainable.
And maybe you could share a little bit. You mentioned Zero Waste Kauai. What are some of the other partnerships and other community groups that you're working with or have desires to work with? And then we can maybe segue also into the let me step back. You mentioned a Perkins grant, and I doubt many people in our listening audience know what that Perkins grant is. Could you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So this Perkins grant in particular is the purpose of it is to help draw underrepresented students into the program, and specifically looking at the ratio of men to women in the agriculture field. And so we're trying to make our programs more attractive to women. And there's no reason why there needs to be such a discrepancy between the number of men and women working in agriculture. For people who are drawn to being outside, working with plants, being around food, it's a great practice whether you're a man or a woman. And so we're really working to see how we can attract more females into the program.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. That's Benjamin Katz from Kauai Community College. and this is Jimmy calling through, doing the show.
Well, thanks, Felicia. The Perkins Grant, and you talk about training, it is about workforce development. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Getting people interested, as you said, specifically trying to increase the amount of women involved in agriculture. I think historically folks kind of think of that as a man's job, to ride the tractor and go out, plow the fields and take the produce to market. But we also know that's kind of changing. There's a shift that's occurred. Obviously, Margaret Slosh, whose farm is called One Woman Farm, was not your typical farmer born into farming and raised on the farm. She was a student at the University of Delaware and went on a, if you will, exchange program and was in South America when she had an epiphany about food production and ways to be of service to humanity by growing food. And that's kind of the focus of our discussion today, as well as future discussions as far as working with others and addressing this kind of critical issue of how do we grow future farmers? How do we go out purposefully to either recruit people to learn about the skills and the skill sets and the necessary experience to be successful? And I think, Megan, you have been involved a little bit of trying to bring people in. Can you speak a little bit about that effort and what does that look like right now?
Yeah, sure. So we did pilot an ag internship program that's paid for high school and college ag students. We started that in December, and we had a little pilot, and it went really, really well. There was actually more interest than we had funding for, so we had to go scramble out and get more funding for more kids. So it was kind of interesting. A lot of people said, oh, our kids don't want to farm. And, you know, it's not true. We work really closely with all the high schools and all these kids in ag, and what happens is they don't have opportunities for it. And when, you know, especially if you come from a low-income family, your free time is spent working. You know, I came from a single parent. I understand where some of these kids are coming from, where they can make a choice to start an agricultural career, or they can make a whole lot more money going to work at a hotel and getting tips and bussing tables and things like that. So if we don't provide those kind of opportunities early on for them, they really won't have, you know, that beginning career mindset where they have an opportunity to climb the ladder and see those entrepreneurship opportunities down the line for them. So it's been really interesting. You know, through those conversations, seeing that there are so many kids really genuinely interested, and somewhere along the way they lose it, whether it's for economic reasons or other. But I think we're really starting to close in on that gap and provide them with more opportunities, and that's helping very much to bridge that place where we've tend to lost a lot of people in the past from farming. It seems like there's a lot of people that are coming into farming for the first time, but they're older. You know, they might be in their 20s or 30s before they start to see that interest. And I think if we're fostering that at a little bit younger of an age and continually providing those kind of opportunities, then, you know, we just strengthen that whole career pathway, as they call it. So that way they're, you know, we just have better channels established for kids. So we're going to continue that program. We have one starting up in just a couple weeks for Native Hawaiian youth through Alulike. And we're going to be placing them at a Waimea farm. It's called Kauai Farms, and it's through Kuga Agriculture in partnership with EV Farms, and they're doing some sustainable food projects. They do the Waimea soup kitchen garden over there, and then we're also going to have some over at Malama Kauai's farm, and we're going to be bringing them around to different farms that are in our program and getting them around.
And Malama Kauai's farm is in Kilauea.
Yeah.
And there's also that.
There's so many farms up here. So we're going to be doing a lot of great tours. And kind of like you guys were talking about with women, you know, half of the people that are applying to our program are girls, which is really exciting. Half the people that were in our program in December were girls. And if you start looking at our farming economy, we have some amazing women. We have Louisa Wooten, who is just like the organic farm goddess to me. Every time I have a question, I call her. You know, Jenny Rizzuti is coming up with all the chickens and pigs and
Marta
Hannah.
Whitlock and
yeah,
Chris Marta. Kobayashi.
There's so many. So
Stacy.
It's great. Stacy, absolutely.
Sprout, Beck.
Mm-hmm.
What about the GoFarm program? I haven't heard that come up today, and that's a pretty big one.
Yeah, where's Eric? Thanks for bringing that up. Yes.
Eric said he was going to call in.
Yeah, GoFarm is Eric Hansen's baby right now. He is helping usher in a new cohort of students, and that's also available through Kauai Community College. That's a state program that is looking at farm training and looking at the whole spectrum of skill sets, whether it's the soil science and plant biology, as well as marketing and other useful information that's going to help the business end of being a successful farmer. Let's talk a little bit about what are the challenges that farmers face. What are you experiencing, Megan, as far as what people are sharing as being difficulties? And then, Benjamin, you could share some of the thoughts of what you've, in your short time doing some research here, in preparations for that grant. What are some of the hurdles or obstacles that we're facing?
It's a big question. I think they're really, really diverse problems, and it depends on who that person is, who their personal challenges are, what area of the island they live in, and what those assets and resources happen to be, and what level of their career or farming interest they're at. I know, you know, land access issues for people without a lot of experience is a big one. Most of the large farm land managers and things like that that make those decisions on who gets land, you know, you can take classes, but without the experience, they really want to see that combination. So I think that's why, you know, Eric and Ben and all of us are kind of working together to make sure they're getting the hands-on in partnership with that technical education, too, so that we can help people have better access to land.
And just jumping in for a moment, I think one very, very evident problem is just the cost of land and the cost of living. And I like how in the GoFarm program, I think his name is Stephen Chang, is that right? The director,
yes.
The statewide mm-hmm. director, he came in to the group and he spoke about how to get some funding. But, you know, right now we have the legislature going, and we really need to be also constantly bringing in our representatives and senator and things like that, because it's very, very difficult to even get access to this money that the state is going to be able to give when people don't have a lease on the land that they're farming. And so I just kind of jumping here, but comes up really heavily in both GoFarm and in our Farmers Union meetings and things like that is people have somewhat access to land to farm. It's owned by somebody else. You know, there are people who buy these parcels, and they're willing to let people come on and farm on them, but they might decide to sell it once the farm is actually working and nice, and then those people are just sort of booted off. I mean, that's to me a very huge piece that we see over and over again. Or, you know, how do you take your trees with you once you leave, you know? So,
well, and it's hard to farming's a full-time job. If you're not living on the place that you're farming, which is another huge challenge related to that, I mean, how do you do it? You're driving somewhere and back and forth, and, you know, same issue with losing the land. But if you can't live there, which is one of our major problems right now, is figuring out the solution to that, I think.
Are you looking at that, Benjamin?
We're doing the best we can. We don't have control over, you know, what the legalities are living on ag land. But I think it would be great if people could do that. It is. It's a big problem. You're at a huge disadvantage if you're not on the land that you're farming 24/7.
Do you, in your agriculture program, offer a public policy of agriculture? I think that learning civics and teaching these young farmers to understand what is the structure of government in Hawaii and the structure of government at the county level and how to actually make that difference is really critical, because I think that when we see with large farms, they have a person whose job it is to look after the political interest. There's nothing wrong with that. They're looking at it, and the Farm Bureau, which tends to be representative of the larger farms, they have somebody set to work on that, whereas the small farmer, you know, they're just trying to fix their tires or get their tools out and things like that. Oh, we have Eric on the line, too. Jimmy, are you okay if we bring him up at the same time?
Let's bring him on.
Let's bring him on. Eric, are you there?
Aloha, Felicia.
Okay, so Eric, Jimmy, I know I kind of jumped in with something there, but those are, and Eric, in your class, you're the GoFarm guy.
Yeah.
This discussion has come up robustly, and what I'm just throwing one more thing in, but Margaret, who came, what I found, because I went to your class, she was at the class instead of on Out of the Box, where she was talking to everybody, but it was really good. We saw that in Pittsburgh, she had the very same problem, both with, you know, people needing to live on the land and not paying them, not being able to pay them, having these interns. So I'll let you carry on, but that was a very... We saw that on the East Coast, same situation. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm just tuning in right now from the Big Island. I didn't get to actually hear much of the conversation earlier today. I'm working with my family on their farm. But, you know, it's always been, I think, a problem here in Hawaii for sure. And I don't know if it's reaffirming or alarming to know that in other parts of the United States, so that's how farming is being done. But I think also you go to other parts of the world and, you know, the farmer and the farm laborer are not necessarily the most highly valued person. Just like a lot of our most important people in society are not the ones that are really getting valued for what they should be getting valued for. And I'm not sure how we can address that, but I think creating a more conscious culture that's being aware of the nuances of what's going on would, you know, create that stimulus to kind of at least get the dialogue going and how we can provide alternatives to our situation.
Okay. I'm going to let Jimmy jump in there, and, of course, I have some
Eric,
ideas.
Eric, I'm going to ask you, because we talked a little bit about this not too long ago offline, what got you into farming, and what do you think is the attraction to farming for young people today?
Well, I will quote a experienced farmer that I very much look up to here on Kauai, and as he said, farming is a seductress. I was seduced into farming. It's something that I can't not think about. It's just like that beautiful woman that you keep on thinking about, or that beautiful man that you keep on thinking about. And it's just the more that I get involved in the aina, the more that I can't let go. And I think for me, there's nothing more satisfying than seeing what she's done at the end of a day and really reflecting on what you're contributing to the greater good, whether it's in your own community, whether it's for yourself, whether it's for the whole world. And there's nothing more gratifying and satisfying than working with the land, being intimate and loving the land, caring for the land, and having it provide something for you as well. And it really helps humble and ground me and staying stable and sane by just having that opportunity to cultivate food. And it seems like the more you cultivate food, the more you cultivate a community, a culture, a community of agriculture. It draws in a greater relationship with myself to the aina, and it helps me draw in a greater relationship to my community at large, because I am doing this, you know, for, you know, the global community, but thinking about this on a local level. That's just probably 1,000 of 20 bajillion more reasons why I got into farming. And there's just nothing more gratifying and humbling and just inspiring and motivating. And, someone once told me, I got to go to church on Sundays. And I found myself every Sunday working out in the Lo'i over in K&I on Maui. And I just started to realize, nature is my church. So I think we can all just very easily step outside of our houses and just go to our spiritual realm.
Can I get an amen?
Amen. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Out of the Box, Jimmy Trujillo.
And Eric, thanks so much for chiming in. We were talking a little bit about your program. Would you like to, or could you, for listeners that aren't familiar, share when your next round of students and Ag Curious courses are going to start and how folks can get involved?
Okay, well, we're going to be doing a recruitment seminar on April 20th, Wednesday, April 20th, at 6 p.m. over at the Kauai Community College. So for those who are interested in learning more about the GoFarm farmer training program, we'll have a big Q&A informational session. We'll get to talk to myself, the program coordinator here on Kauai, and then we'll have a guest panel with several different experienced farmers from the island of Kauai come talk story about, you know, what it is to be a farmer, what their personal manao is. Maybe it helps seduce you into becoming a farmer yourself. We'll have a couple of our former students kind of talk story about their experiences in the Go Farm program and just kind of really let you know what they got out of it and all the excitingness of everything. And we'll also have several different agencies, government agencies from the island of Kauai that help farmers with technical assistance or financial assistance and just kind of let you know, give a little bit more information about, you know, how you can kind of start getting your farm and what it would take to do those kinds of things. So that will be on April 20th. And then for those who are really interested in the GoFarm program, we will have an application sign up that night where for those who are interested, they can apply to the program. And we'll start the first week in May, touring with different farmers around the island from all over the place, doing all different types of styles of farming, where we'll get to tour with them, we'll get to work with them that day, talk story with them, really just kind of get a feel of what it's like to farm in that kind of different style and what it's like to farm in that different region of the island so that people are really exposed to the different styles of farming. That's why we call this segment of the Go Farm program Ag Exposure. And then starting the first week in June, we'll start our agricultural school where one day a week we have a lecture talk story segment where we'll have different guest experts or myself come talk about the various nuances of farming, whether it's, you know, from the science side of things about how to grow a crop or whether it's the business side of stuff, how to market and sales and distribution. And then one day a week, we also get together at the farm where each person is given their own individual farm plot where over a four-month period or one season, they get to develop a crop and business plan, which I get to help provide technical assistance and support. And the beauty of this part is that you have all the seeds that you want given to you for free, all the organic amendments that you need given to you for free, the land is for free, the water usage is for free, all the tools, they're all there for you to use for free. So it's a really great way to really get a hands-on experience of what it's like to be a farmer without actually having to make the full-on investment so that you really know what you're getting yourself into. And ultimately, you know, you gain the confidence and a skill set to go out and farm. And one of the best things I've always heard from my students is the networking that they get to create with knowing all these farmers and all these resources, because no one's ever going to know how to do everything, but when you build up a network and a tool set, you can't go wrong. And so one of the best things, I guess, about the Go Farm program is that it gives you that confidence to say, hey, I can go out and do this, because it can be a totally scary thing to just, you know, drop what you're doing and, you know, do a 360 career change, if you will. But you know, we're the Go Farm program. We're out here to just give you the confidence that, hey, I can do this, you know. So really amazing program, and every time we finish a cohort, it makes me cry because I just see everyone just prospering and doing better than they was before, and it's just really reaffirming to know that, oh, you know, we're just going to have that much more nutritious and delicious local food being produced here in Hawaii.
I have a question. You said it was April 20th. Can you say when and where? What time and what location?
So that will be Wednesday, April 20th at 6 p.m. over in the One Stop Center at Kauai Community College. So when you first drive into the college, you'll see... I'm sorry, not the One Stop Center, the Office of Continuing Education and Training.
Yes.
Which is right next to the One Stop Center. So as you first come into the college, it'll be the brand new building that says, Office of Continuing Education and Training, and that will be in room 206, from 6 to 8 p.m. And we will be providing some local produced goodies too, for you to snack and munch on. So, for those that are families that like to eat a little something, come by for the food and stay for the farming.
Wonderful.
Love it. Come for the food and stay for the farming. Eric, before you go, just a quick maybe description of what your students, or maybe share some success stories, some of those students that have taken the class, put in their time. And now, what do they have to show for the fruits of their labor?
Well, we have one student who is developed a farm plan and is working with or is in the talks with some of the bigger landowners over on the west side to develop a farm plot. That would be diversified agriculture on the west side, which is kind of a big step forward from moving away from a lot of the current farm models that are being implemented on the west side. We have two former students from last year that are successfully farming. One of them has developed a new CSA over on the North Shore. And then we have a farmer who is... successfully developing an egg and poultry business also. So we're looking forward to having more and more people go out and farm. We have several other former graduates that aren't maybe directly doing massive commercial production farming, but are doing farming for the community-oriented farming. So one of our former students is a teacher. And is applying a lot of his mana'o from what he got to their own school farm at the charter school he works for. So, you know, and then there's some older retired individuals that are getting back to land that their family had used for generations, and then they had gotten away and done the city thing, and now they're coming back and just reviving their own homestead so they can be more, you know, sustainable and provide for themselves. So in terms of farming, I think that we're having many success stories, whether it's, you know, wow, I got my whole backyard full of herbs now, and I'm supplementing all my food for my own personal income, or you know, people that are doing things on a more commercial scale. So I would say everyone who's come out of Go Farm has had their own farming successes and the many different kinds of ways that you can farm. And I think that's one of the best things that the Go Farm program shows, is that we try to give you as much exposure to as many different styles of farming as possible.
And Eric,
there's just so much you can choose from, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Eric, I know that you're working with people on the west side, and Joshua Fukino is one of those people that you've been working with out there, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and so he's ready to join people on the air at some point too. Here, I mean, he's on hold. Just letting you guys know.
Oh, we should get him on the air.
Well, thanks, Eric, so much for calling in from the Big Island. This is a first for me to have a radio show while I'm not on Kauai, and to also hear somebody calling in from the family farm on the Big Island working the aina. Eric, before you go, is the contact information for you or for wannabe students, wannabe farmers, is that the OSET number, the 245-8318 number, or is there another way to get in touch with you?
They can call that OSET number, which again, Jimmy, is
245-8318.
8318. They can also go onto the Go Farm Hawaii website at gofarmhawaii.org. Or if they'd like to, they can contact me directly at 896-2793, or they can hit me up on my email at ewhansen, that's E-W-H-A-N-S-E-N, at hawaii.edu.
Okay.
Right on. Well, mahalo, Eric. Appreciate the call in, and have fun on the family farm. Enjoy, and we'll be seeing you later on in the month.
Yes, mahalo, you guys, and I look forward to continuing much more in this conversation and dialogue that I'm sure we will continue to have in terms of providing future food security here on Kauai and as a nation.
Thank you so much. And I think, mahalo, and I think I might have gotten the wrong Joshua name out there, but we'll see. We'll pull him up. Aloha. Thank you for holding. Joshua?
Hello?
Hi. Did I say your name wrong? What's your last name?
M-O-R-I. The other
okay.
one sounds really exciting, too, though.
Okay. I'm sorry. Hey, I West Side Joshua, I grabbed the wrong one. So, hi. And Jimmy's on the phone, and Megan's in the room, and so is Benjamin.
All right, on you.
And Joshua, thanks. I'm glad that we had a chance to talk story this afternoon a little bit before the show. I really don't know what the Pakaki Academy is all about, what you guys are doing. I don't even know if I pronounced that right. So for listeners that don't know who you are, can you share a little bit about your background and why we invited you to talk story about the future farmers here on Kauai?
Yeah, right on. Well, thank you, first and foremost, for seeing the value and you know, kind of our greater picture. And Pakaki Academy is just a really small part of that, and I won't really talk to it much because it's not really applicable. But that is something that I run, and that's just student-athlete training. It's a program we're running on the west side for kids. Really, Ivikua is why were you guys, I believe, asked me to be on the air with you, especially talking about the future of Hawaii and sustainable farming. So Ivikua is our nonprofit that we're starting, and we're going through that process right now. Already doing a lot of really good work in the community, but it's kind of taking on wellness as a whole. So definitely nutrition and food production is paramount part of the success to being well. We also have two facilities, fitness facilities, a tutoring center that we're building up in Waimea, and then going through the process right now to get some land on the west side and start kind of a learning farm. So definitely stoked to hear Eric on here and talk, because Abara knows what he's talking about, and he's been a huge support for us. Going through it's a tough process, and going through that. And also, you know, everybody, Megan, who's in the room with you, has been super instrumental in getting us this far. So thank you for having us on the air.
Hey, thank you. I'm really stoked about what they're working on. Josh is kind of a humble guy, but he does some really amazing cultural exchange internship programs, too, with Native tribes and Hawaiians. Lots of really, really cool work. And they actually hosted some of our interns on their side. So they work a lot with the kids out there in agriculture. It's great.
And Joshua, just because I couldn't really hear too well, tell me again the name of the program that you're working with directly with students. What are the ages of the students? How do you find them? And where do they go after they've completed your program? Or what's it like at the tail end? Where do they go to do what they're learning to do?
Well, you know, I can address that in a couple of different ways. The first way would be that we have a lot of programs we're working for. Actually, last night, Megan was I'm thankful that Megan stayed up late to help us get a grant turned in for a number of internship programs we're working on for this summer for high school age kids to work on the farm for 6 weeks and do research, as well as a fall semester internship for seniors to help them. They can develop their hypothesis and work within the tutoring center and develop their senior project for graduation. So those are two that we're developing right now and really putting a lot of energy in. The ones that we already have going is I've, for the last couple of years, been working just in Kekaha Waimea community, Hanapepetu, but really all age athletes. And that was just a way to get into the community and work with in a realm of wellness that I'm really familiar with. All ages, typically middle school, high school kids, for our development, it's we want to work with anybody in the community that's willing to come out and do work and for themselves, for their family, and for the greater picture. So, yeah, where do they go right now? We have athletes that have trained with us and gone through the programs at, I want to say, 5 different universities. But, again, that's something that I had worked in collaboration with Nike and Seven on getting going, and we're continuing that one. But really, as far as ag goes, we're developing more in that area of wanting to empower the youth to just have a positive option, a place to go, learn a skill set, and really start to feed the community again in a number of different ways.
And how would you say that your participants, how do they respond to some of the activities that are, if you will, are kind of INA-based or that are related to agriculture? What do you see as a result, or what is the impact, if you will, on them?
Yeah, I see a lot of, I think the best way to say it is they're hungry for it. It comes to the kids over here really natural. When we went and dug Lo'i and been thankful enough and lucky enough to work on some willing people's property, and they say, yeah, right on, come up with, you know, the baseball team, let's do work. So we go get all the kids together and we'll go to the Lo'i, and man, it's amazing to see what everybody working together in something they've never done before. A lot of these kids, you know, Kaina with Ohio and Apoi Company is great. He's a cattle farmer at Makaweli, and he'll have them come in, and he always does a protocol at the beginning, and a lot of times he asks, hey, who's ever been to a Lo'i before? And a lot of kids have never been in a Lo'i, and so he'll explain it a little bit and go through more of the process. But you can see it in their work ethic. They're stoked. They're so excited to be there having the opportunity, because there is a part, I think, number one, especially for Native Hawaiian kids, where it's ingrained. And we go up, you hear about it. You hear about the Lo'i, and almost magically, like it's, oh, it's a place that doesn't even exist, but it does exist. It's here. And so when they get the opportunity to work and see the fruits of their labor, even in activating one Lo'i in one day, weeding it, whatever the hard work is, seeing that be done, come to completion, I think it's got a great effect. And all the students from multiple sport teams, and I know larger than what I personally have done, another one of our board members, Clint Snyder, has done a really good job of working with Waimea High School youth and activating them, doing some permaculture farming and some other projects. So not sports-based at all, just really interested youth. And maybe they're not stoked on it right away, but by the end of the program, and that's something I'm sure he can call in a little bit, he can talk about it more directly. But just, you know, being loosely associated with that, looking at it, going, oh, man, these guys are stoked. They're learning something. It's connecting them, which is one of the biggest problems we face, in my opinion, in Hawaii, is that there's a total cultural disconnect from the aina. A lot of it is in books. A lot of it is, you know, kind of mythical anymore. And people are hungry for that. All across the world, the people are hungry to be reconnected to the land that they live on and that they're from. So I just see it as, with the youth, you know, they're on it, they're ready, and they work so hard.
Thanks, Josh. Megan, I'm going to ask you, do you see similar types of response from your participants in your internship program?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I have to say, the kids that they had out on the west side, they are probably some of the hardest working kids we've had in any of our school gardens and school farming programs. The internship program, they work hard. You show up with a giant truck full of mulch, and all those kids don't even need to be asked. They come up with shovels. Auntie, can I help you? And they get to work. It's, you know, the work ethic is incredible.
That is really great. I want to throw in a little plug for WIPA Foundation, too. It's another location on the opposite side of the island, in at the end of Hanalei, on the west end of Hanalei, also does focused learning for particularly Kanaka and Hawaiian cultural-based learning in the Lo'i.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate, Felicia, you bringing that up, because as Joshua was talking about his participants, I reflected upon some of my students at Kapaa High School that were part of the program at WIPA that were in the classroom, maybe not the most motivated or maybe gifted. They weren't academically inclined, but their stories and the camaraderie and, like you said, the connection that with the land and with their culture really, if you will, brings about a sense of identity, a sense of empowerment, and builds confidence in their being. And I think that this is something that's really important for us to keep in mind in developing new programs or doing this type of outreach work for new farmers.
Yes.
Is to have that element be present.
And I think what's really important for people to realize is, like, when we say, make that comparison, and maybe they don't do as well in the classroom, it's because they're not engaged. It's not because that they aren't completely intelligent. It's when they engage at something that grabs their heart and their spirit. Well, then all of a sudden they wake up and they perform, and or perform is probably the wrong word, but they wake up and they create. And Kamealoha Hanohano Smith, he also has a program right now. I forget quite the name of it. I think it is, it'll come to me in a moment. I'm sorry if he's listening. But he's got a great program, and that is happening there in Kealia also, and working with the Lo'i down there and Adam Asquith's farm. So what I think is really wonderful, and we've got Kawaikini, which is right there on the campus of Kauai Community College. All over there is little sprouts of this reclaiming the culture that is so important for everybody, not just Kanaka Ma'oli, everybody. We all need it. So yay, and thank
Absolutely.
You, Joshua.
And I don't know what kind of time frame you're on, Joshua, but before we get to the top of the hour, maybe you could talk a little bit about, and Benjamin as well, as what is, well, sorry, my phone is kind of getting crazy right now, but what are some of those potential areas for collaboration? What are some of the future programs going to look like? What do we have to do to kind of build the capacity and infrastructure to bring folks in from the student young age to then get them into programs like Eric, or get them into the college programs, or get them out onto the farms and internships like Megan's doing, so that we have successful farmers in the future? What are some of the things that we need to do more of or bolster to make that happen?
Yeah, a lot of things from my perspective. Again, I think the cross-pollination, which is kind of a nerdy way of saying it, but of working together to build these internship programs to get more opportunities, it is absolutely important. What do we need infrastructure-wise to do that? I think we're doing it. I think there's a lot of, Felicia talked about, you know, there's East Side. Oh, man, you guys are cranking. You guys have so many amazing opportunities. We look over there and, very cool. We're stoked to learn and work with everything going on, because it is such a good example. There's individuals, there's nonprofit organizations, there's Kapaa High School, you know. Kapaa High School is doing really well. I think that we probably have one of the best gardens in the state of Hawaii. And, you know, maybe I haven't visited every single one of them, but I can say with a lot of pride that they're doing some good stuff over there. the west side is way different. So as Megan and I talk a whole bunch of every island, geographically, we're way different. So I think systemically the change that needs to happen we have a lot. I think if you just look at the Moku of Kona, and this isn't an east-west thing, this is a looking at statistics thing, and this is why these type of the systemic change and starting with the youth and empowering young people and Hawaiians and local people in general to really grow their own food and be sustainable. It's because as we look at where we're at right now, I made a little short list of some things. Moku of Kona, we have the dump. We have the largest open-air testing site for agrochemical poison. We have the military base where they fire missiles. We have the power plant. We also have the site for all three of the proposed sites for the new hydroelectric power plant. So really, if we look at Oahu, what part of Oahu has those similar type of infrastructure inside the community? Waianae, right? Nanakuli, places that are typically Native Hawaiian. So when I look at it within ourselves at Ibikua and these programs, oh, man, we want to learn because these guys up on the North Shore, they've been doing it a long time. Waipa, oh, they're such a good example. Their community work days are phenomenal. All those organizations, we really want to work with them and take a page out of their book. And I think that they understand, too, that oh, we're dealing with a whole different monster on the west side. We're drier. We're hotter. We can grow different things. You know, look at these. Any of the stuff I've mentioned, these aren't negative things. I think what we're trying to do is, in that systemic change, is turn that conversation instead of being negative, let's turn these into positive opportunities to make change. So by handing the o'o over to the kids, the shovel, the pick, the intelligence, engaging them, Felicia, out of the classroom, also inside of the classroom, and why this is important, why this is what used to happen. Yeah? Never used to have classrooms like this. This is a really natural thing that all of us are doing collectively, just turning around this retrograde motion of intelligence, looking back and going, oh, yeah, this is nothing new, us working outside and learning with our hands. Yeah, absolutely. It's got to happen systemically. We have to create positive opportunities. How do we do it? We do it through education. We do it through conversations, having an honest dialogue. I think as an academic, one of the hardest things to do is to be engaged with a larger, more broad community about intergenerational trauma.
Yes.
That's something we don't talk about often in this field of, oh, why is it this, this, and this? Well, who owns all the land right now? Who used to have that land? Who used to be able to access it? Do you think that there might be possibly some frustration, some intergenerational frustration passed down from knowing that your kupuna used to be able to access this place freely and malama that place and see it grow? I mean, we have stories of 14-pound yams growing in Mana, right? You ask anybody on this island how many times they go on the aina in Mana. It's only to hunt anymore because who has access to that land? It's not locals, you know? So that's one of the things I think in moving forward, and I'll wrap up my thought on that, is the systemic change, right, the infrastructural change that has to start with honest conversations within our community about history, about recognizing history, and about coming up with positive programs moving forward. And then really realizing that those programs are a faculty. That is a thing that all of us who have moved here last year, who are super stoked, who moved here 15 years ago and are super stoked, who have grandparents who can trace their lineage in the Kumulipo to whenever, right? All of these people, it's going to take a whole effort because we all live and pull from resources from this aina.
Yes, it is.
I have to move forward with that.
I want to ask you a question, too. I know the Waimea days are coming up like next week or something. Are you going to have a tent or anything in there? I mean, what you're telling me is so fantastic. I'm so excited to hear what you're saying. I give you maximum respect. This is a beautiful vision. If people are interested, is that, for example, a place where they might be able to come and find you? Have you thought about being there?
Oh, I think we've thought about it. I don't know if we've had a consensus agreement on whether any of us have time. I know that right now we have a really good board. At Ibikua, we have an unbelievable board. We also have an unbelievably busy board. I think when you assemble an amount of people who are like-minded and so passionate, it would make sense that we all have multiple irons in every fire.
Yes.
So I know we would love to have a representation down there at the Waimea. on their days. I can't answer that.
So honestly, how can people find you?
We'll have a booth with fire.
I know. Can you tell? I was like, do it. You know, KKCR is kind of trying to think about doing that too. So I was thinking maybe
KKCR is trying to muster up, if you will, resources to have a booth. Maybe there's an opportunity to collaborate and have a shared booth. I know, Felicia, we're going to go to the top of the hour very shortly. And Joshua, maybe you could hang on just a little bit afterwards. And to carry on the conversation a little bit about ways that we can collaborate and ways that we can share resources and extend that value a little bit further along. But Felicia, I know you've got to take care of some business.
Okay, so we will be right back with you. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
And Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Hawaii Life and Tahiti Nui.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving,
hey Chris,
and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Is there anything in these notes?
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
Dove presents One Evening Only on Kauai, Because You're Beautiful Tour, Tony Childs, Yoga, Music, Experience. Friday, February 12th in the Red Barn at the All Saints Church in Kapa'a. The unique experience combines movement, meditation, storytelling, and Tony's powerful voice showering you in the beauty and wisdom of who you are. The profound celebration of life experience is not to be missed. Tony Childs returns to Kauai, Friday, February 12th, All Saints in Kapa'a. For more information and tickets, dovepresents.com, 635-5556.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio and supporting us. All right, Josh, Jimmy, are you still there?
Yep, still here.
All right, you're back on. Carry on, gentlemen.
I was going to ask, I wanted to bring Benjamin back into the conversation.
Okay, Benjamin's right here.
Area of collaboration. Benjamin, what would you think, or how could the college play a facilitating role in this? What are some of the resources that the college brings to the table in this discussion?
Well, we've got a lot of land to use, and we've got a lot of knowledge about how to use it. Eric plays a large role in our different agriculture offerings for education. For me, it's really about listening to what's needed in the community, and doing my best to support, the goals of others. And, I'm not really in a position to dictate what I think needs to be done, but I can play, a strong role in, supporting others, to bring their vision to fruition. You know, I'm not a farmer. I don't, have expertise in tropical agriculture, but I care, and a lot of people at KCC care very deeply about sustainability and sustainable agriculture. So we really want to be there to support people in whatever way we can.
I have
a quick question to Josh and Ben, as well as Megan, because you're involved in that, and Felicia, I'd love to hear your perspective on this notion of diversified ag and sustainable ag, and why is that so important for our local economy, and how does that counter or differ from, if you will, the more traditional
model that has been employed here in the islands of large-scale industrial ag or commercial and conventional agriculture. What is it about diversified ag and sustainable agriculture that is so important for us?
Yeah. Megan, I think you could answer that really well. I just want to reframe that. The word traditional into diversified sustainable ag is traditional. Large corporate agriculture is a 100-year-old practice.
Conventional.
I think part of moving forward with that conversation and getting people to put value in that sustainable farming is to reframe, you know what I mean? Even like the way that we look at it, because we're taught, that's the normal way to farm is huge plots, one crop. Yeah, but go ahead, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's interesting when you have these giant farms. They're really, what we're talking about is corporations, which are typically top heavy. The people on top make a lot of money. People on the bottom make very little money. When you're looking at sustainable and diversified farming opportunities, especially the things KCC and we're trying to really promote, all these organizations are trying to promote, a lot of it's entrepreneurship, and it puts the decision maker and the business owner and the power and the economic choices within the hands of the person that's actually doing the farming. And I think that's what we're all, you know, in order to create strong economies, you need to empower local people to be able to make their own decisions, start their own businesses. And Kauai is, you know, ripe for these kinds of opportunities already. About 25% of our population is involved in small business and entrepreneurship activities, which is enormous, mostly due to our isolation. But I find it really interesting. And I think because of that, a lot more people are not as risk averse, and they are more open to the idea of owning their own business or doing something independent and taking care of yourself and your family. And I think it's more normalized here than it might be other places. So I think strengthening our economy in that way makes a lot of sense to me.
I think one challenge.
It really stands to benefit, Megan, to play off of that. It's something we talk about quite a bit, but it's diversifying is an economic strategy that allows you to have staying power. If Nike sold one pair of shoes and one pair of shoes only, they wouldn't be economically sound, right? They would, and I guess you could argue about that all day, but you know, you understand the example. I think over here, with having so many people with that entrepreneurial personality trait, whether it be because of isolation or maybe culturally, with sustainable farming, I think one of the things that we need to talk about in the economics is we talk about it all the time. We hear about it all the time. We're the most isolated islands in the world. So sustainability was, at one point, the way for 1,000 years, that was just the way of life.
Yes, that was how it was. Kalamai, for just one moment, I have a person, a listener, who's pulled over to the side of the road with a pen and paper in hand. She wants to know how to get a hold of you, Joshua, Megan, and Benjamin. So, because you guys have so much vital stuff, so we can come back to that. Joshua, how does somebody get a hold of you?
Okay, we can, you can go to evikua, evikua.org, and there's a connect button on there, or you can just email us at evikua@gmail.
Evikua, I-V-I-K-U-A, is that right?
I-W-I-K-U-A, yeah. And our website is under construction, but we'll have it finished within the next week. But there's already good information kind of where we're headed, but the better way, if you have direct information for us or things you want us to think about or good opinion, email us and we're good at getting back to you.
Okay. Jimmy, how do they get a hold of you?
They can get in touch with me via my cell phone number at 346-7725. If they're Facebook users, feel free to hit me up with a Facebook friend request.
And that's James Trujillo, James
Kauai Community College.
Yeah, so, all right, Benjamin?
They can reach me at bkatz@hawaii.edu or at 245-8388.
Okay, Megan?
Megan at malamakawaii.org. It's M-E-G-A-N, the really simple way. Malamakawaii.org. You can call me at 828-0685, extension 12.
Thank you. And then, Joshua, you were talking about how Kauai was sustainable completely for a millennium, and that's where I broke you off.
Yeah, and that's just a quick thought that, you know, I think we get hit with a lot. People talk about it a whole bunch, but I think one of the points in progressing this conversation forward with action is that we can talk about that, and we can believe it happened at one point, but most of the people living on Kauai right now have never experienced sustainability. Definitely people who moved here who don't have lineal roots to Kauai or to Hawaii maybe have never come from a place in the last 100, 200 years of sustainability. So to re-envision that, it's taking a little bit of getting over that hump, and that was one of the things that before the break, Jimmy kind of posed that question of infrastructure and how do we move forward and how do we work together. And I think that we're going through that. I think we're going through that process right now. But it's important to recognize that, yeah, while we hear this stuff all the time, we hear, yeah, because we're the most isolated, which we are, there's no reason for us to be importing so much stuff. The only reason is money. People want things, and it's about money, bringing stuff in. So sustainably, agriculturally, we have everything we need here. We have the water. We have the land. We have the intelligence. Boy, there's so many intelligent people on this island who know, who are from here, who have moved here. It's kind of a cauldron of intelligence. But we're just connecting the dots. And that takes a larger conversation that is hard when you have so many different backgrounds coming together. So I think we're getting there.
I want to challenge you just a little bit. I think one thing about sustainability that we always have to recognize is that you can't separate any one aspect of society from all the others. And, you know, if the Hawaiians were living sustainably, why aren't they now?
That's a loaded question.
I know,
that we could take 5 hours, like, aggressively schooling.
Absolutely. And I think that it's important to recognize that a sustainable society has to be adaptable, has to be able to withstand outside influences, inside influences, and it, you know, if we're talking about sustainable agriculture, obviously it's going to look a lot different now with all the invasive species that we're dealing with the change in diet. So I think it's a really important conversation, and I think that we can't have it in an isolated context.
So, Joshua, forgive me. I just want to jump in because I have so many listeners that might have just, you know, that might have been a little shocking. So you might totally know this, but for the people driving down the road that don't know it, when contact first happened, there was an intensive die-off of disease for a lot of different reasons. But so I think any culture anywhere, if they lost 80 to 90% of their population from an immunology issue and being overworked, there's a lot of politics in there, but it was, what happened was tragic. And so
I'm not trying to downplay that at all.
Okay.
I'm well aware of that. Sorry if I offended anybody.
No,
that, I mean, that's an important part of culture is when you do come in contact with outside influences that, you know, tragically destroy the majority of the people. What in that culture can help bring it forward into the future?
Yeah, I think that's a really, man, I think that's such a good topic of conversation. I can see how 5 years ago I would have been like, oh, what the hell? But I see where you're coming from. I see, yeah, it's something we need to address. And, you know, Felicia, I think we've spoken before, and Megan definitely knows me and knows that, you know, my quick answer to moving forward in this conversation and in this larger dialogue and not focusing on one little portion of sustainability is, yeah, I think this, you know, it's a perfect time that we have politics happening on the grand scale. And it's such a good dichotomous view of that Euro-American vision of white is right. And the point I'm making is have a honest dialogue about who's doing it now? Why are we not living this way? Why is this not happening? Knowing history, it happened. It was really bad. It's still happening, right? But until we have that conversation, which is a much larger conversation, it's going to be really hard to be sustainable in anything. But I think we're doing little pieces to work towards making us a society conscious enough of self and of surrounding to have such an educated and deep and hurtful and hard and long-coming conversation. But it's necessary, absolutely. I think that questioning that is right on. Why are we not? And sometimes the hardest thing to do is look in the mirror and say, you know what? Why aren't you making a change? You know? What are you doing to make a change? So that's where this infrastructure and that's where this working together and creating the programs and creating good opportunities within our communities is that small step. It's that little, that's the catalyst. That's the little piece that really gets the ball rolling. It starts that conversation with ourselves because I know right now someone came from Kilauea to take off and said, this is how you got to live your life. People would be like, get out of here, bro. Same thing. People went from Waimea to Hanalei and said, oh, you guys are doing this wrong. It'd be the same type of thing. So within our own communities and having these opportunities within these little circles, I think is going to broaden that understanding and that critical thinking upon ourselves and what we can do to be sustainable. And then we'll start to work. You know, and again, if you look back at a way that worked, well, that was the Ahupua'a system, right? Those who live in said Ahupua'a know the issues of said Ahupua'a. So it doesn't make sense that I would go to another one and say, oh, this is what you guys are doing wrong, right? Because I don't live over there. So it comes back into working within that construct. And luckily in Hawaii, we have a really, really awesome system for an example that was born here, that worked here. So we have that to kind of look back to.
Yeah, and I really appreciate just the fact that we're able to kind of tie that in with some of the larger challenges that we face, whether it's the onslaught of capitalism or the militarization of the global economy that has shackled the people to provide for themselves, and that the extractive industries or the military industrial complex or even the financial markets that want to exploit and take advantage of for profit and gain, irregardless of the, if you will, the struggle and the suffering that that causes on culture and on people. And so this is a perfect example of like looking at, examining, and then deconstructing those facets that keep us, if you will, held back and not allowing us to move forward.
Jimmy, can I jump in here for just a moment?
No, please do.
You know, I've been so focused on what's going on in the legislature. There's all these bills. It's an onslaught, and right now, you know, I winced over just seeing, you know, coming up, I think it's tomorrow, we had some people on Hawaii Island that have been these protectors up at Mauna Kea. They won against the state relative to the management of Pohaku Loa, where the army is in there using it as a bombing range. So that is coming up tomorrow before the legislature to make that be such that can never happen again, that the people can hold the state accountable to look at the army. And then there is a number of water rights issues that are very much impacting not only agriculture, but especially traditional agriculture. There is so many elements that are out there. I'm not sure, Joshua, if you are tracking them, but people really need to learn how to go to capital.hawaii.gov and get in there and participate, because, you know, it's a battle every step of the way. And what happened last year with Mauna Kea, that was like a Gandhi moment when you figure people are up there at 9,000 feet, young, old, camping up there for 9 months protecting that place, and they won at the U.S. Supreme Court. And there are a couple of bills before the legislature this week to take that win away also. And so the amount and importance for people to be diligent and pay attention at all levels is critical. And I know that is perhaps more of a Western way of looking at, but you got to work in parallel worlds. and pay attention. And anyway, I just had to throw that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it just emphasizes the interconnectedness of all of these issues, that we can't just kind of look at one in isolation, that we have to have that broader perspective. And that's what I really appreciate. Benjamin, one of the things that you're trying to do at the college is just encourage that conversation about sustainability, that we can have these conversations. And I appreciate you, Joshua, in our conversation earlier online about where do we want to go with this, because there are so many facets that need to be really put on the table and as a community looked at, and for us to determine, hey, this is where our values are. We value, like Eric said, agriculture. We value the farmer. We want to appreciate that more and support it, as opposed to just saying, oh, well, you know, it's kind of a dirty job and we can get cheap food elsewhere. It's just better to go shop at, whether it's at Walmart or at Costco, because you get a better deal on the bulk supplies there shipped over. But we recognize if we shop at our local markets, we all benefit, as opposed to just the individual family to gain from saving a little bit of money on their purchase.
And these things are important around the world, and I'm just looking, like, I want to give an aloha to Seoul, Korea, who's been plugged in since the time we came on the air. So Seoul, hello Seoul. A number of people from Japan are listening. We've got Calgary. We've got people from around the world, certainly around the islands. It's not just us, even though we're talking about what's right here in Kauai. People connect from many, many places. Europe's on there, so... Hello, world. Thank you for caring about Kauai.
And moving forward with the conversation, what are some of the ways that we want to engage our community? What are some of the things that we'd like to, what kind of, if you will, events or what kind of actions can people take to get involved, to if you will, join this growing movement of sustaining ourselves by growing our own food locally?
I think there's a lot of options. I can only speak for, you know, what we're trying to activate and do. But, I mean, that's a big one. But I would just say quickly that, yeah, there's a lot of options. Know your community. Number one, stop abusing the word kamaaina. I think on this island, maybe get a handful left. Kamaaina, knew the names of the winds, knew the names of every peak, knew the names of every river, every inlet, every puka. That's kamaaina. If you want to become aina, it's not about getting a discount at the grocery store. It's about knowing the place you live. And that's the biggest argument for the reintroduction of Hawaiian culture into every facet of this conversation. Why is it necessary? Because if you want to live here, you take on kuleana, period. It doesn't matter where you came from. When you move here, you have an inescapable obligation to malama aina, to take care of the land. And that's because regardless of race, we only have so much, and we're on this little tiny island. So I think knowing your community, wherever that is, I think that's where I would start, knowing the individuals in it, knowing the history of it, knowing the names of the place, and then when you talk about moving forward into being sustainable agriculturally, maybe for people themselves, they want to have a garden. I think knowing those things, why is this name this? That's going to tell you what you can grow. And people might laugh and go, no way, but for real. It's in the stories. So, you know, with that goal of Ibikua is to help reconnect and recreate and empower kamaaina. We want to build kamaaina, local people with an understanding, an intimate understanding of place. Now, in the 21st century, to today, we want to work on that. So I think these programs... North, East, everybody, there's a lot of really good people and programs happening. And if you know your community, you're gonna know those ones. And if you're a like-minded individual who thinks that stuff is important, you're gonna be able to speak with those people. So I think knowing the community is the broad answer there.
And Joshua and Jimmy, we have a person who's been holding to ask you guys a question. Can we take that?
Sure.
Yeah, you both.
Okay. Aloha, thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
I'm not sure if that's me, is
it? It is.
Yes?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Not so much a question as a comment that getting back to the idea of the genocide, which was very real. It was not only genocide, it was cultural genocide, and it is ongoing. The Hawaiians have an analogy. They say, we're like the geckos who have lost their tail. Because 200 years ago or so, 300 years ago, they still had their tail. Then there was contact.
I need you to speak very directly into the phone.
Okay, I can also hardly hear you, so we might have a poor connection.
We have a poor connection.
Is this okay?
Barely. So you're making a good point. Make it quickly.
Yeah, I'd like to continue a little bit because Western society lost its tail about 10,000 years ago. That was the agricultural revolution. That was the beginning of the unsustainability of Western culture. That was also when we began to disrespect nature, when we began to have fixed residences or fixed houses, which also allowed us to store food and to store other possessions. And that was also the beginning of the male domination of women and the male domination of the land and the possession of the land. There were any number of different crises that started back then that we're coming to a culmination of right now. And people for the last 30 or 40 years have talked about a cascade of crises. Well, we are in the beginning of the cascade of crises. We're at the peak of just about everything that you can imagine. Not just oil, but food and water, especially agricultural kind of water, soil. We have lost 50% of our soil worldwide. We're at the beginning of a major shift, and we need to start very seriously understanding what sustainability is. Like your guest at the Hawaiian, and I don't remember his name, but
Joshua.
He was very clear about the fact that this used to be a sustainable island. It's not anywhere close to a sustainable island anymore. In fact, Kauai used to export food to the other islands. So we can get it together. There's obviously major hurdles like the cost of land and, you know, renting land, how much that costs, et cetera. Anyway, I just wanted to have that perspective of the 10,000-year-old loss of our tail. We need to refind our tail, just like the Hawaiians need to refind their tail. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Out of the Box with Jimmy Trujillo, Felicia Cowden co-hosting. Marshall's in here, too. I haven't even...
Hey, aloha.
There's Marshall.
All right.
So that, to me, kind of begs Benjamin into this. Benjamin, do you have a comment on...
Yeah, I think you bring up an interesting point about sustainability. And people, a lot of people I've heard talk about sustainability as maintaining something into the future. And I think what doesn't get talked about enough is that sustainability needs to take into account that things change over time. And if we're not planning for change, then we are setting ourselves up for disaster, which is what we see in almost every indigenous culture on the planet, is that the change comes and we see the destruction of these banks of knowledge and wisdom. And so moving forward with where we are now, our plans for a sustainable Kauai has to include the understanding that things are going to change over time, and that's a good thing. That's part of the natural systems. That's part of nature. Things change.
There's another caller with a question. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Sorry, I guess that's me.
It is.
Hi there, Felicia. This is Clint. I'm working with Josh.
Okay.
Ibikua.
Okay, speak right into your phone.
Okay, sorry about that. So, yeah, I guess I just wanted to say a couple of things about the West Side and what we're doing. First, you mentioned the Waimea Days. We don't have a booth, but if they wanted to come over to Halepuna, the old mission house right by the hospital, they can come walk through the projects that we're working on now. And we finished up a internship with the high school during the Christmas break, and we're going to hopefully get another one launched for the spring break, getting high school students to come in, and they receive a stipend, but they also learn agriculture and sustainable agriculture at that. And it goes on their resume and everything else. But if anyone wants to come check out that project, they're welcome to. It's going to be pretty much right across the street from the major parking lot, the big field. Yeah, right there by the Waimea Canyon School.
Anyone's
welcome.
You would be able to receive people on most all the days. It's like a whole week, this event.
Yeah, I live right next door, so they're welcome just to go check it out. And if I see people walking around, I'll go out there and greet them. I just say, just watch where you walk, because a lot of cakey plants planted, but they're welcome to walk around and just check it out.
Okay.
And if we're around, I'll definitely come out and meet them and love to chat with people.
I'll probably be one of them, because I would really love to see what you're doing. I'm really, really, you know, you and I, we've talked on other things, and if I can, I'd like to take this moment to bring up two events that are coming up that anybody in the ag community might be interested in, but perhaps Ibikua would be able to benefit heavily from. We are having another seed and plant exchange on March 13th. Now, it is up in Kilauea, but there's a lot of prep for this one, and I think there'll be a whole lot of plants. It might be a really great opportunity for you guys to come up, maybe bring some of your kids, and take a big selection of what you want. If you need plants, it would be a good opportunity. And I would like to also throw out to you and anybody listening is next fall the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers is having the international conference. So it's statewide, but it's also bringing people from Japan. And sometimes this would be for export crop. You know, we're looking at sustainable. That doesn't mean necessarily exporting, but avocados, different things like that, they're coming looking for growers. And it might be really a wonderful place for your group or different groups to come and have even a booth there and to be looking and learning and cross-pollinating and food. And, you know, there's a lot of really good information. So I just so salute what you guys are doing, and I want our projects to merge, I guess. I mean, merge or at least cross-pollinate a little bit, because it sounds like wonderful things are happening, and the more we work together from both sides of the island.
Yeah, exactly.
Amen.
There's a lot of really good things happening, and I know Megan at Malama Kauai, she's hard at work, and all those guys over there are really hard at work, helping out a lot as well. So mahalo, Megan. And yeah, we'll definitely love to go over to those events, any kind of exposure, especially for the next generation, any kind of exposure. Kind of how Eric was saying earlier, it's infectious, you know, and you start planting seeds and seeing them grow, and it does something internally. It changes you for sure. So, yeah.
Great.
You know, I have a question, actually. Benjamin, you mentioned earlier the figure of 90% imports. Kauai imports 90% of our food, and I seem to remember that number used to be 95%, and I've always sort of wondered where that number comes from. I would love to track it and see. I mean, are we down to 89 now?
Well, I would love that too, because there is actually a lot of food being produced in the Northeast Corridor, getting a little bit of regional pride here, but I'm just so pleased to see how much productivity is on all these trees and just filled with food. So I wonder if they're undercounting.
It's certainly possible. And the statistics come from the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
They're probably undercounting.
I don't know exactly how accurate it is,
If I could chime in on that.
Go ahead.
A lot of those numbers are actually paper numbers from sales, and when people grow their own food or it's within a community, the paper numbers go down to on whatever's on paper because you're growing it and you're eating it. There's no exchange of monies. So that, I believe the number is a lot higher than.
So when they say that we're importing 90% of the food that we eat, it's actually 90% of the food that we buy. And 10% of the food we're buying here. And it doesn't include all the food that we're growing and eating.
And sharing.
Yeah, no, I think in the government system, too, there's so many people that do, like, cash farmers markets that aren't reporting all the funding. I've seen the recent maps that the Department of Agriculture was putting together for all the states across the island and trying to measure agriculture. And one of the things that they said while they were doing the maps is, oh, we're not really tracking things that are, 3 acres or less.
Oh, really?
And I was like, well, you're going to miss a lot of farms on Kauai if you do that.
Yeah.
I think regardless of 90 to 95, whatever, or the accuracy of the statistics, I think that everybody can go ahead and say it's not good enough. Even if farmers markets, I think we can look in our own community and say our kids, our elders, our families, ourselves are not ingesting enough locally grown vegetables and fruits, regardless if they're being produced or not, we're just not. I don't care if it was 60%. I ain't good enough. Period.
With all the land and the water we have, I'd say for West Kauai, that number's higher than 90%. I'd say it's more like 98% of the ingested food is imported.
Mm. I know because I do neighborhood agriculture. I have a yard in, and that's what used to be up and down just about every street in Kilauea. And I want to give a shout out actually to the Filipino community because it was almost how you can stereotype which house might belong to that demographic because it was just this amazing abundance. And I will be honest, I was kind of trying to mimic that, but I probably eat 70% of my food from my yard, and it's not hard, at least not when it rains. In a rainy place, it's not hard.
Unfortunately, I think you're in the minority. But, you say it is easy to do, but you how much time do you spend in your garden?
Well, my little buzz line is I don't like to weed, water, or work. But if I'm completely honest, as I'm looking over at Marshall, some of my friends come in there and help me cut the trees and stuff. But the biggest thing for me in the work effort is harvesting and holding it back because we chose to mimic the Hawaiian and the Southeast Asian style of gardening and doing edible landscaping. And the stuff that we pick plants that grow like a bad weed. We don't look at what you're trying to get at the produce section that really comes from Idaho and Iowa and Indiana and picking on the I states. We pick the plants that are meant to grow here. And what I've learned is that in Polynesia, you're meant to eat in community. Food comes out in such incredible abundance, you have to share. And I share, like, the amount that my yard produces would probably feed 5 houses, and so I'm sharing it all the time.
Yeah.
And Joshua, you were saying something?
Oh, no, I'm just saying, it's a good, it's all good stuff. It's just, I just want to keep it in perspective that it's just, we can talk about it in our own personal, what we're trying to do, but systemically, it's just not it. People aren't ready for as a community. And then if you look at if you extrapolate that into the American culture or Western, as the caller before, hopefully could have defined his terms better. But whatever we're looking at constructs, we're just not ready for that.
Why not?
It's all good.
Joshua, why aren't we ready for that? Because 50 years ago, that was the norm. It's not that long ago. It was parents' generation, not grandparents' generation, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
A Mexican-looking individual like me would not have been able to get a master's degree at Montana State University and teach. So change happens, absolutely. I guess why are we not ready in the Boston?
Well, I'm meaning like it was our norm.
As a culture, you know what I mean, Felicia? People, addiction-wise, we love sugar. And unfortunately, our gardens don't grow sugar like we think as we see it. Now we know in fruits there's natural fructose.
Mm-hmm.
There's sugar in everything in nature in that sense, in a nutritional sense. But the marketing, I'm saying it that way in a really broad sense. If you watch the Super Bowl, what are we being marketed? High fructose corn syrup. My mom comes from Iowa, corn farmers. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what's been marketed. And in the last 50 years, we've seen a huge shift into that. So why I say we're just not ready for it as a broader picture, as a larger statement, is that we're not really being allowed and led to be. And while individuals can make their own decisions, I was told when I was learning that one of us is not as dumb as all of us. And that was one of my favorite
professors. I love that.
I use that in philosophy as, you know, on an individual level, we can have a great conversation. There's five of us connected to this line, and we can all talk about the individual things we do in our lives. But as a larger picture, we're all part of that bigger picture. And while we wish that we had more Filipino-esque gardens, because, yeah, communities typically always garden together, because that's what it was, regardless of where you immigrated from. We just on the large scale, it's grocery stores, it's fast food, and it's those are the social constructs that is that much bigger conversation of being a family, of what that family unit means, what it means to be connected. And again, I don't want to go into too far of a tangent of that, so I'll leave that there. But I think that's what I mean when I say a small sense of what I mean when I say we're not ready to eat what's in our yard, is that our taste is it. For that, and I say we, I mean the royal we. I mean across the board. If you go to X fill-in-the-blank elementary school, what would that kid you say? I'm gonna give you an orange treat, and you're gonna say Cheetos, Doritos, not orange, not carrot. Why? Well, we don't have orange and carrot commercials on every fourth cartoon. Yeah. So that's what I mean by the we are not ready for that.
And I'd like to just chime in on what we talked about earlier about that disconnect. Just to support that thought that we're not ready, and that's because that disconnect has been so strong and so widespread that we've lost the connection to growing our food, just like you're talking about, Joshua, that we don't really relate to it as food. We relate to them as tastes. We relate to them as snacks, as these consumable little products that are so readily available right there by the cash register or right there, you know, in large bulk items that I don't really think about it other than, hey, I want the, you know, mix special so I can get a good deal. Everybody wants a good deal, and it's causing problems that we're identifying. And so I think having these types of discussions helps reestablish the connection. Go ahead.
Well, I'm learning so much. I just so enjoy that, and I realize how different the different regions are, because in the crowd that I hang with, I guess, people don't have money for the cable. So many people I know, show of hands in here, who has TV? Does anybody have TV? None of us have TV. Like almost anybody I know, they don't watch the TV, so they don't see those commercials. And it's gotten almost like... if you bring something you bought to the potluck, you know, you're a little second class. You know, you have to bring something whole. And then so, you know, you're cooking for, you know, an hour or two. Or, you know,
you have to know who grew it.
And you have to know who grew it. And you have to, you know, you say, oh, well, this, but the salt, it came from,
if
you
it's
know.
An animal, what's its name?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a little bit crazy, but...
quoting Portlandia.
Yeah, it's a little, almost, but it is... And it wasn't that way maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but between the people who've lived here for generations on the northeast side, who used to just get all their fish from the ocean and grow their food, and they do this stuff like second nature, and then the people who can't afford to like do all the modern stuff because everybody's almost homeless.
I think it's all a decision, though. I think you're choosing which kind of economic structure you want to go with. And some people are still really caught up in the
They have a real job.
Material goods things. Yeah, they work like 60 hours a week. Their kids are in school. I mean, it's something where, you know, the choice to make something, they're exhausted. They don't have time. And that's where us making convenient, healthy, local products available to them. On the west side, you can't go into a store and go get carrots that are grown here.
What Joshua was saying at the beginning is he talked about who the employers were and what the impacts were. And so all those impacting things, whether it's the base or big agriculture or the landfill,
yeah, and that's why I was saying you can't take anything out of the system. It's all connected.
Yeah, so those people get jobs that pay them money, so they can go to the grocery store and they can get the, you know, and the people.
Or they can go out to eat. We're talking about our food infrastructure, and you know the restaurants aren't really geared to make use of locally produced foods.
They do, but there's not enough of it for them because. And I just know this from my husband only is in one very small restaurant, and he tries to buy as much locally as he can, but we hang out with a lot of the restaurant folks. And the problem is they want to buy volume, and we don't have volume. So I think until farmers, and this is no knock on farmers, but they're very independent people, and if we can get them to work together to organize
in a cooperative
kind of way so we can balance purchasing with demand, I mean, there's a huge opportunity for us all to localize the greater food economy on the island.
But maybe the other side of the island, and I say this lovingly, Joshua, there's no judgment at all. Maybe if you guys had some poverty over there, even though you think we're an inverse bell curve up here. We have the rich and those who wash their cars. You know, it's like people don't have money anymore. A lot of them don't. And so you can't afford to sit there and go and live the American life.
I just want to reframe this. I think, you know, one thing that hasn't been said, there's so many things, and it's all good. I think this is the really good part of having conversations on really meaningful topics, I'm going to say something, and I hope nobody gets offended, but the east side is way different. North Shore is way different.
Yes.
From the people I work with every day, and know every day, if they're listening to this, we'd already have a really knee-jerk response. Oh, yeah, because it's all Holly money. Holly's getting money. When you have money, you have time. When you have time, you can garden. And when you have to work because there is not an economic structure that is drawn pretty much on the map, once you get out of Poipu, once you come down from that real nice Kalaheo neighborhood, there's this economic line that's drawn. It's drawn in our education system. It's drawn in every way that we look at, we talk about, we envision the west side, and the west side is strong. There's a reason when I moved back to Kauai, I wanted to live on the west side. I'm from the west side, Molokai. It's the same. Molokai is even the same. People talk about it like, oh, puting, no more money. I don't want money. Doesn't mean I'm impoverished. But choices. We talk about choices, yeah?
Yeah.
It's just different. When we talk about what the east side can be, and that's something that's part of that larger conversation we're talking about that needs to happen, that isn't happening. It's not because we're due to plantation mindset, which is still very active. We're very quiet. We call it humble. It's passive, right? It's a passive, oh, well, that's just the way they do it. That's the way we do it. That's not a native thing. I mean, Hawaiians got in boats and navigated the ocean. And they did that, and they farmed, and they created society, and they created rules and all this stuff very successfully. We need to have these conversations. Because I already know in listening to this, it's all good stuff. Individually, right on. You guys are doing great stuff. East side, awesome. North Shore, awesome.
Well,
but recognize that even in the Hawaiian way of thinking, you have took wealth, vai-vai. Right now,
right.
You have water.
We have
you
water.
We have water all the time. We don't want that water.
Right.
Right? So
right.
We want our supply. The demand is there. The restaurants will buy local produce. We have to produce it. We the people. So enough calling, cannot, da-da-da-da. We, you know, with what I think all of us talking and listening right now are trying to do is get to that. Say, yeah, we're ready. Let's produce the food. Now, there's a lot of uphill battle in getting that land. Whomever owns it or believes they own it, whoever is the leasing agent, let's do the process, right? The leveling field is there. We've all gotten educated or had an opportunity. Now, racially, I'm saying that there is no ethnicity here that has not had the opportunity. Now, that could go into a way bigger fight, but I'm not taking it there. What I'm saying is, we get educated Kanaka. We get educated Haole. We get educated Filipinos. We get educated everybody.
Yeah.
And now I think there's a cauldron. There is a movement of young individuals going, yeah, we can do this. Let's do this because it's necessary. We have to do it.
Time to
so
take action.
Look at these things, it's the bigger, it is a division. It's rude to not talk about it like that because we try and be malaya, we try and be smooth about it. Oh, no. It is division. Call it what it is. There's a reason that Kauai High School has double the population that Waimea High School does, which means they get double the funding, which means every kid in Kauai Hill should have to go to Waimea High School. It should give us a way bigger talent pool to make these next generation of warriors who want to be farmers, yeah, in our great program. But no one enforces that line. They look at the wealth happening in Ngue, and they go there. They look at the wealth happening in Kapa, and they go there. So, I mean, really, we have to call a striped horse a zebra. Call it what it is. We have difference, and let's work with that difference, and let's make these programs, let's work together from our areas and our communities, and let's supply these. Let's not give any grocery store any chance to not buy local produce.
There you go. And I think that where you really called it in a way that resonated with me, the wealth that we have is vai-vai. It is the water. And so when I say it just grows in my yard, I don't have to water it. And what our food forest, we don't water it. We have the rain, and that's what makes the difference. And, you know, when I look in your region there, I'm seeing people who have, they have houses. They have houses that they own. It's not three generations stuffed in one houses. I mean, sure, there is that, but you guys have real jobs. You have trucks that you own that are brand new. I mean, you know, when I was going kind of door to door there for a while and really seeing, these people on the west side live more of what is considered an ordinary life, where they have a home and they have a truck and they maybe don't work three jobs or they aren't homeless. I mean, when the west side says, don't make us lose our jobs, I think, you know, they have some real accuracy in that, because when you look on the North Shore, people are working service jobs. I'm not putting down whatever people are doing, but most people I know are scrambling between two or three different things, and they don't have an easy income. Either that or, you know, their income is completely separate from here. We have some, but we don't. The other side has a lot more people who get a paycheck.
I think sugar is a really good example. When I was over to Maui in the fall, we took a visit to HCNS over there and spent a lot of time talking to the guys. And
that's the sugar company.
Yep. And to just hearing kind of their, you know, at that point they were still like, we're not going to shut down. Everyone says we're the last one and we're going to shut down soon, but we're not going to shut down. And they talked, you know, in a way that really warmed my heart about their employees and their families and how they took care of one another and the longevity they had employees and how they paid everyone well. But when it came down to it, they were employing a really large part of the community. They were doing a monocrop in a very kind of downward spiraling industry, and they had decades of foresight that this was already happening. And what they didn't do is they didn't decide to pivot and shift. And even when we visited in the fall, they were still saying, you know, we want to plan on diversifying. We want to plan on doing orchards. We want to plan on this stuff. And I'm looking at them like, you know, if you had stopped planning and started doing 5 years ago, you'd be in a really good position. And it's harder to move when you're a bigger company like that. And when I look at it at the west side, that's what's happening. You know, as these big companies that they're gobbling people up and they're giving them these great opportunities, but when they go, what's going to happen is they're going to leave a hole. And we need to start filling that gap now, because I feel like there's a lot of momentum to saying, like, you know, these aren't what we want for our agricultural economy, but until we can start to replace them with really thriving, healthy systems, we're just going to have a gap that another giant system's going to come back and replace continually until we create what we want to see.
And I'm glad we have a couple West Side guys on the phone here, because I want you to say what the West Side feels, because it's...
I'd like to chime in on that, actually. I think Megan's right, and I think one of the biggest things is value right now, and what you value in life, and, you know, the whole economic system that we're in right now. It definitely changes things, because it changes the way you farm, and if you don't value things that you eat, and I think that's a big issue on the west side is the value. Like you said, Felicia, you know, you go and you see people in their houses and they get their nice cars and stuff. And yeah, they end up working 40 hours a week so they can pay for those nice cars and their things and their big flat screen TVs and everything. And I think what is really nice about what Malama Kauai is doing and doing the school garden project and funding these agriculture internships that I'm lucky enough to be a part of, it's instilling some values back into the youth that we left behind. Because when we went into monoculture and that system of farming, we disconnected ourselves from the land and we lost those values. So that's why the farmer now, I mean, even Kauai, but all over the world, you know, in modern times, the average age farmer is 60. And that's changing. Thankfully, the next generation is starting to step up, and I think we need to bring those values back. So where, like you were saying earlier, I think it was Jimmy saying, it's a good feel when you go into the store and you can, you know, pick some nice foods or whatever. It's right there on the shelf, and you just grab it and stuff. But there's an even better feel, 10 times better, when you can walk out your door, or when my wife can walk out the door and pick from our garden everything that we need for dinner, and I don't have to send her with my 3 kids in the car on dangerous roads all the way to Lihue to get some sort of healthy food, you know, and that is a whole different set of values. Mm-hmm. You know, some people like, you know, going in the car and driving and stuff, but what I think is valuable is being able to walk out your door and pick and eat the freshest, full of enzymes, food that's going to sustain you and your neighbors and everybody else. And I think what Malama Kauai is doing and other people are doing, Eric and all kinds of guys, we're trying to get it to the next generation and change the set of values where success is no longer how much money you have. Success is how rich your life is.
And thank you.
In health and wellness.
Thank you so much for that. We are almost at the top of the hour. I think that is such a really great point to finish on. I don't know if Clint is still on the line. I want to allow Benjamin, you know, 30 seconds to give a final thought, Jimmy, and then we have to move on to the county council report and Evolve. Dove's show is going to be on at the top of the hour.
Thanks for having me, Felicia and Jimmy. And for me, I think, you know, it's been said in the past hour already, but just to reiterate, having these conversations is essential to understanding and envisioning how we're going to move forward. So thanks, everybody, for contributing today, and I look forward to continuing.
Jimmy?
Likewise. Well said. Thank you all. I really appreciate and mahalo you guys for the work you do and for the conversation we had. Thanks so much again, Felicia. I'm out.
Okay. And Clint, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you just say really quick where people can find you, and then we're going to have to go. I mean, for the Waimea Days.
Okay. So for the Waimea Days, we're right on Huakai Road, which is right off of Waimea Canyon Road. Right in front of the hospital. It's the old two-story mission house. There's a ginormous monkey pod tree right there. We live right next door, so you can even come knock on our door if I'm not outside. But I might be outside just working and caring for the plants. And, come by anytime. We'll be home.
Okay, thank you all. And Joshua, thank you so much.
You got it.
Okay, aloha.
Yo.
Mahalo, Felicia.
Mahalo. So this has been Felicia, Jimmy, with Out of the Box, and Dove is up next, and we're going to hear the Kauai Council report. KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of February 8th. There will be a council meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, February 10th. The meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here highlights the meeting agenda. The council will conduct 6 interviews for various boards and commissions. The mayor transmits for council consideration and confirmation mayoral appointee Glenda Y. Nogami Struffert to the Planning Commission at large, and her term ends 12/31/2018. This is Resolution 2016-19. Council member Ku'uli'i transmits for council consideration a resolution expressing the support of the council for the Federal Equality Act and urging the United States Congress to ensure its swift package. This is Resolution number 2016-20. And this relates to LGBT Americans. Council Chair Raposo transmits for council consideration a resolution relating to an electronics record storage policy for the County of Kauai. This is Resolution 2016-21. Council Chair Raposo transmits for council consideration a proposed draft bill to amend the relevant section of the county code relating to the amount being charged by the Kauai Humane Society as an impoundment fee for keeping a stray or unlicensed dog. This is proposed draft bill number 2616. Council member Yukimura transmits for council consideration a proposed supplemental money bill to fund costs related to the additional needs of the Kauai Humane Society to effectively enforce the barking dog nuisance. This is proposed draft bill.
Declare your love on KKCR. Donate $10 or more to KKCR by Friday, February 12th, and hear your declaration of love announced on KKCR every live show from 7 a.m. to midnight on Valentine's Day, Sunday, February 14th. More information online at kkcr.org or call 808-826-7774. Declare your love on KKCR.
Still have one more day left to declare your love for a $10 donation or up. You can give more than $10. We will say a declaration of love on the air. So you could say, Dove loves life, or Dove loves love. How's that? You like that? All right. I want to thank the whole crew there for a great out of the box filling in for Jimmy. I'm like, what day is it? Is it Tuesday or Thursday or? Speakerphone's like. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is your community radio station, and it's now time to evolve. This KKCR program is supported in part by Kauai Mini Golf and Kauai Coffee.
Kauai Mini Golf, part of the nonprofit Anaina Ho Community Park Campus, is proud to underwrite this program. They are open daily from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., offering 18 holes of miniature golf set in a lush Hawaiian botanical garden, and their cafe serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner. More information online at anainaho.org. That's A-N-A-I-N-A-H-O-U.org.
Kauai Coffee. 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island, at retail locations island-wide on all the Hawaiian Islands, and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.